You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Jessica Toku Ingoa, no mai haere mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rahina Monday. I'm your host, Jessica, and I'll be with you for the next hour. I'm also joined in studio by producer Ezra. E whai aki nei, coming up on the show, I speak to the co-founder of a New Zealand NGO, Remi, who works to alleviate period poverty, about a UK humanitarian grant they have won to supply reusable period underwear to people in Gaza. And I speak to senior lecturer in bioethics at the University of Otago, Dr. Elizabeth Fenton, about the government removing free flu vaccines for children under 12 and Maori and Pacific people aged 55 to 64. Ezra, what have you got for us today?
I spoke to business school researcher Shahil Kishore from the University of Auckland about his recent study on the impact of micro-influencers during crises.
He aha o whakaaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of our pieces, so get in touch. Tuku patuhi mai, text in on 5395 or waia mai rane. Give us a call in studio on 309-3879. Ka oa e wariwari e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ini kororo anō hi pakihiri roki roki mā runga i te pai tuku tuku o irarangi poho. Mi haere ki 95BFM irakati.com, and you can catch all of our stories and more by podcast on our website 95BFM.com.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
A recent study by the University of Auckland has found micro-influencers play a greater role in spreading information during crises than their larger counterparts. The comprehensive study analysed 3.9 million tweets related to significantly trending current affairs topics on Twitter. I spoke to business researcher at the University of Auckland, Shahil Kishore, about the implications of a study and its relevance to authoritative bodies. Here is that interview. What initially inspired your study on micro-influencers during crises?
Well, we were always quite interested in the impact of influencers and the role they play during crisis events, and so we wanted to explore that further.
Were there any unexpected findings in your research?
Yes, definitely. So I guess the biggest unexpected finding is that small-scale influencers, like micro-influencers, situated near an ongoing crisis, are far more influential than their large-scale counterparts. It gets a bit clearer with an example. So social media posts created by micro-influencers situated in Ukraine at the beginning of the war were much more likely to be shared online than influencers with hundreds of thousands or even millions of followers overseas, right? So we kind of pinned this down to the fact that micro-influencers possess more on-the-ground knowledge, and that on-the-ground knowledge plays a really important role during an emerging crisis event.
Why might micro-influencers situated near the crisis have a more significant impact?
They were able to impact their community more directly. So somebody based local to a crisis, it feels like they know what's going on more so than somebody based overseas.
How can we prevent the potential spread of misinformation during crises?
Yeah, now that's a really important question. As we found that these micro-influencers have such a huge impact in the spread of information during a crisis.
What role do you think policymakers and social media platforms have with working with these micro-influencers?
It's really crucial for government agencies, policymakers, and social media platforms to encourage influencers, particularly micro-influencers, to cite factual sources and engage in responsible content creation when disseminating this type of information as a crisis unfolds. There's a lot of things around nudges these days, for example, so that's a little notification that might come up when a person is using a particular hashtag or discussing a particular piece of content, just to make sure that they're sharing accurate sources, right? That they're engaging with appropriate sources before they distribute some information, because you never know what can go viral. You never know what can be spread around throughout the world. And so making sure that the source you're citing, the source you're sharing is accurate is really important. And that can be put through social media platforms and can be encouraged by policymakers to make sure that these types of controls and support mechanisms are in place.
Are there any further steps planned from this research?
We're not sure, actually. So we found this, and it's quite a unique finding. Most other studies show that large-scale influences have a really important effect during a crisis, but our study shows the opposite. So we're planning to look into this a little bit more, we're planning to really explore the role of micro-influences and why they're so important in the context of crises. So yes, we do plan to delve into this some more, but we're not sure where we're going yet with this.
Is there anything else you would like to share about your research?
I think the main thing is that this shows that you simply do not need to be an influencer with a huge online following to have a real-world impact during a crisis, right? You don't need to be somebody with hundreds of thousands or millions of followers to actually have an impact on your community or have an impact on how a discourse is shaped online.
That was business school researcher Shahil Kishore on the impact of micro-influencers during crises.
Kei te whakarongo koe ki te Wire, marunga irirangi pō.
The Wire.
And we'll be back right after this short break. Keep it on the B.
R.I.P. Mittens. She's gone. At least I have these photos to remember her. Look, her first steps.
Aww.
Eating her first bird.
Ew.
And her last moment. I call this one raspberry jelly.
Ugh, why? What?
Damn that car.
What is that shining in the gutter?
Her beautiful angelic eye.
Pro Gear Photographic. For photos that'll bring out the light in your eyes, no matter the circumstance. Head to Pro Gear for all your photography needs. Open now at 3 Railway Street, Newmarket, or go to progear.co.nz.
Don't know a sousaphone from a sack butt? Forever confusing spittle halves for glass harmonicas? Do you get nervous around dulcimers, hammered and Appalachian? You're not even sure which of those instruments I just made up, are you? You need travelling tunes. Let ethnomusicologist Dr. Kirsten Zemke lead you around the world on a weekly expedition of musical exploration.
Travelling Tunes every Friday on 95BFM Breakfast.
Brought to you by Drake Street Studios.
At this radio station, we do our utmost to abide by the Broadcasting Standards Authority and their rules and guidelines. If you seriously think we've crossed the line on air, give us a call on 309 4831 within 20 working days of the broadcast date and tell us about it. We'll be able to help you out and tell you the procedure if you wish to make a formal complaint to the Broadcasting Standards Authority. Fuck knuckles, cock and piss. Balls. Thank you.
The Wire.
I don't know, and frankly the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. New Zealand NGO REMI, an organisation which works to alleviate period poverty, have received a UK humanitarian grant to supply reusable period underwear to Palestinians in Gaza. I spoke to REMI founder Emily O. Young about what the humanitarian crisis in Gaza has meant for menstruators. I started off our interview asking O. Young about what REMI does.
Yeah, we're a small Kiwi NGO, and our mahi is to really support period poverty all around the world. And so the news item is that we're really pleased to have received a UK grant to supply reusable period underwear to 5,000 women and girls in Gaza.
Can you tell us a little bit about how you went about applying for this grant and what it is able to do?
Yeah, sure. So we were actually handpicked by a UK organisation in partnership with the global response team with Oxfam, and we're supplying 5,000 pairs of reusable period products, which is against the norm when it comes to humanitarian aid. Very often it is single-use disposable pads, and so we've created a solution that looks at the entire process of the washing, drying, and the reusable product itself, which will last about 4 years. So that's partly why we've been chosen.
Can you provide some insight? Gaza is facing a humanitarian crisis, but what does this mean in particular when it comes to the need for period products?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, looking at the last 6 months, yesterday was 6 months marking the start of this current stage of the conflict. And since then, there's been 1 million women and girls that have been displaced across Gaza. And so they're facing severe shortages of period products. What we've been hearing is that women are resorting to using tissues, dirty cloth because of lack of access to water, and also just reusing single-use pads over again, which is obviously leading towards infections and health complications. You know, there's also, in some camps, there'll be one toilet per 486 people, which to manage your period, that's a really hard situation.
And have you been able to get in touch with any Palestinian organisations about this?
Yeah, we've been able to talk to the team on the ground in Gaza. So that's working with Oxfam's team as well as their local partners. We presented our products to them and answered any questions they had. And one of the things that was noted was the washing bag, which we include in our kit, is really useful because you can put your period underwear or a pad in there and wash it, but take it on the move because people are on the move fleeing from location to location, and it's really hard to find these safe washing spaces. So, yeah, being able to support us on reemi.org will really help support these women.
In terms of your next steps, what's going to happen to make sure that these period products can be delivered to those who need them in Gaza?
Yeah, we're really fortunate to work with the Oxfam supply team. So wherever they're able to get aid in, you know, as we said, it's really hard. It's a really challenging process. Wherever they're able to get aid in through their trucks and their logistics teams and their teams on the ground, Remy period products will be included in their dignity kits. And so it's going to help 5,000 people, but as you can imagine, it's a drop in the ocean of need right now. And so we're really asking for New Zealanders to support us and help raise money for to support another 5,000 women and girls in Gaza. It costs us $33 to provide one woman in Gaza four pairs of period underwear, and that will enable us to make more product, to be able to get that. And really, it's offering dignity. That's the really important thing, is that for an expression of manaakitanga to women that are suffering in this war, just to help them have one less thing to worry about is good quality period care.
That was Remy founder Emily O. Young on their work supplying period underwear to Gaza. And we'll be back soon. Keep it on the B.
Already going hell, just democracy. Yeah, I got more records than the KGB. So, no funny business. You already are.
Something like the penicillin. Just trying to get this, so why you busy stressing? I don't need no credit, but you might swipe the visa. I'm tough like Caesar, no salad. Grown man now, boy, you really starting to panic. Can I get that? You should be though. OG right here, like you got to go. Posted at the crib, watching Yu-Gi-Oh, not playing. Shit tough, but I made it. No way, then I've been jaded for a minute. No, they hate that. With the mess, leave me clever in the head, trying to get by, 9 to 5, give me no time, but I guess that's fine, cause I've been making money, funny how I can't lie, doing too well to say I don't try, but it's easy for me lately, know that I've been rolling with the punches, like Tyson, goodbye, sit back, relaxing, never want to panic, stress on my mind lately, know that it'll be taxing, waking up early, baby, don't think I can hack it, I'ma stay inside, I'm avoiding all the damage, sit back, relaxing, never want to panic, stress on my mind lately, know that it'll be taxing. Waking up early, baby, don't think I can hack it. I'ma stay inside, I'm avoiding all the damage.
What's that new mood? Can't that toe a hoe alone when I found that truth? Conflate these subtle pains with lessons for the wisdom tooth. I threw that coop and ain't coming back. Fought the form of hope, a hope, but trace a bit of tracks. I let the rhythm speak calmly. Put bump a bomb back in the discourse. Sorely missed minor chords. Surely I could conquer all minds within the eye of the storm. Surely form could conquer function. Where's the style and the norm? Like, where's the rhyme and the cause? Find peace of mind in the pause. Philosophizing where this culture's from. Untie the remorse, cause we ain't speaking in Morse. And we ain't asking for much. Just recognition for the truth we hold inside of our gut. And when I'm inside a rut, I synthesize a new strut. Take to the streets and spread my energy like moths in the dust. And in spite of bad luck, in spite of everything, we paved the lane, we peddling. Don't stress a man, it's evident.
Sit back, relaxing, never want to panic. Stress on my mind lately, know that it'll be taxing. Waking up early, baby, don't think I can hack it. I'ma stay inside, I'm avoiding all the damage. Sit back, relaxing, never want to panic. Stress on my mind lately, know that it'll be taxing. Waking up early, baby, don't think I can hack it. I'ma stay inside, I'm avoiding all the damage.
You know, our call is fuck normal. Sorry, I swore. It's important.
That's okay, it's BFM.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire, 95BFM's news and current affairs show. The government has announced that the flu vaccine will no longer be free for children under 12 or Maori and Pacific people aged 55 to 64. I spoke to senior lecturer in bioethics at the University of Otago, Dr. Elizabeth Fenton, who, along with other health experts, says this is a missed opportunity for New Zealand's health system to improve outcomes and achieve health equity. I started off our interview asking Fenton for her reaction to vaccine subsidies being removed for these groups.
The recent announcement that the wider access criteria for free flu vaccination, so that means that flu vaccination will no longer be free for children under 12 and for Maori and Pacifica adults at 55, so between 55 and 64, which it's really a disappointing announcement. It's a disappointing announcement from the point of view of closing health equity gaps, which are significant in New Zealand, because we know that having free flu vaccination for children is really important for health equity because children get more flu and they spread it to their whānau members. We also know that Maori and Pacifica children have higher rates of respiratory conditions like asthma that are exacerbated by flu. And we know some really critical information that makes these wider access criteria really important. So Maori and Pacifica adults have higher rates of flu and lower vaccination rates. And Maori adults have lower life expectancy than non-Maori in New Zealand. So having these kinds of interventions free for these particular groups helps to close some health equity gaps in New Zealand for these groups that are really important.
What would you think is the reasoning behind these eligibility criteria being taken away?
One reason I think is money. So the access criteria were widened when there was additional money provided under COVID legislation, and that has now expired, and so the money has disappeared. But there's always, money can always be blamed, or affordability can always be blamed as a reason for not providing certain things. So I think the more important reason that this is, change has been made is that we really lack the political will in New Zealand to do the things that are needed to close health equity gaps, because equity requires that we do things differently for different groups. We know that it's not one size fits all, doesn't help to address health equity, doesn't help to close health equity gaps. And this isn't about giving some groups an unfair advantage, it's about rectifying unfair disadvantages that we know exist. So there's some resistance to doing this, and we think just overall a lack of political will that undermines support for these kinds of measures.
And what implications do you think might come as a result of this for both young people and Māori and Pacifica?
Well, I think it's probably likely that we'll see lower rates of flu vaccination in those groups, because this is just, cost is just one additional barrier, and more barriers mean lower uptake. So we'll see lower rates of flu vaccination, and likely that will mean higher rates of illness due to flu, and that obviously doesn't help us address health outcome equity gaps in New Zealand.
What would your message to government be when it comes to this decision?
I think there are a couple of things. One is this is a low-cost intervention, and it makes sense to provide it. So we shouldn't let money be a barrier, but we also need to have the courage, the foresight to be willing to do things differently for different groups, and that is a really important message if we're going to make any progress in addressing health inequities in New Zealand.
When it comes to subsidising flu vaccinations, what did we see when this happened for these particular groups?
Well, we see this kind of thing time and time again. We saw it perhaps in most recent or most memorably with the COVID vaccine rollout, where a lot of people were arguing that we should have a lower age criteria for Māori and Pacific adults, and the government chose not to do that. So we see these kinds of missed opportunities time and time again, where the opportunity is there to do things differently for groups that need it, and we don't choose to do that. So in our view, this is another example of that kind of thinking, that we go back to one-size-fits-all thinking when in actual fact we need to do things differently for particularly vulnerable groups. So, there are definitely other areas we need to be alert to these kinds of opportunities all the time. That's a great question. I don't have numbers on that, but I think it's very likely that we saw higher rates of flu vaccination. There was a good reason why the access criteria were widened. Pharmac's own clinical advisors noted that wider access criteria reduce barriers to flu vaccination. So we know that people have a higher rate of uptake of flu vaccination when they don't have to pay for it.
That was Senior Lecturer in Bioethics at the University of Otago, Dr. Elizabeth Fenton, on children under 12 and Māori and Pacific people aged 55 to 64 no longer being eligible for free vaccines.
That was The Wire.
Ko I re te hōtaka katoa mō tēnei wiki, ne te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki o mō tēnei rā. That's a wrap on the Monday Wire. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today. Business School researcher at the University of Auckland, Shohil Kishore, REMI founder Emily O. Young, and senior lecturer in bioethics at the University of Otago, Dr. Elizabeth Fenton. Ni rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou katoa. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.